still back here.
My son's over in Qatar.
Morning. Welcome to the last interim committee of the Veterans, House Veterans and Emergency Services for 2010. I think we have a quorum, so I will open the agenda. Thank you all for coming. It looks like we have a number of guests today and some interesting information. At some point in the agenda, I may interject a work session to get bills introduced when we have everyone here, or if anyone is going to need to leave early for any reason, if you'd let me know, then I'll be able to make sure that we have everyone available at that point in time. But for now, let's begin with the first item on our agenda. I don't think we need to do introductions. We probably pretty much are all pretty well known to those of you in the audience. So we have a presentation on Virtual USA. General Caldwell and gang. You can do all the introductions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department and the Interim Head of Office of Emergency Management, which is part of our department. We're delighted to be here today. We thought this would be a great opportunity for you to see what we've been up to in the last, well, over the last year, I guess, and more than a year. And I think it also kind of hits home real suddenly as of yesterday. If you saw the news reports when we had a major incident in the small town of Almsville. And
did you schedule that?
Yes, ma'am. Indeed, I thought that would be a perfect entree to this discussion this morning. So we were looking forward to that. And actually, it was kind of one of those, as most all emergencies are, as a matter of fact, is it? Yeah, they're never planned. It's a dead stop, and then all of a sudden you got to gear up and go. So good news is nobody was severely injured. There was a few minor injuries out in Almsville, but they were very minor. So that is the good news that happened out of this whole event yesterday. But it also kind of brings a fine point on what we're here to talk about today, which is a program known as Virtual USA. And Virtual USA, and we got a demo that with a team that's going to show you how this thing works. And I think as we started looking at this, the federal government, of course, has already been doing funding a good portion of programs such as this on the East Coast, particularly in the Southeast in Florida and that country where they have a good deal of hurricanes and other events. So this is not being put together necessarily by us alone. We're kind of copying a lot of things that are going on very nicely throughout the nation and trying to see where that works. And we're working right now with the state of Washington in a mutual agreement. And I think what we're going to show you today is not necessarily Virtual USA as like a package, like you're buying a Chevy or a Ford. It's a program that's been developed here in the state of Oregon that is exactly feeds into what we're trying to do with Virtual USA. So I think as you walk through there, as you sit here today and you listen to the demonstration and you see what's going on, I think there's a couple things I'd like you to keep in the back of your mind is kind of the ask that I think we're going to need to have some assistance and some legislative leadership on as we move into the future. And I think the best way I could explain this, and I'm not a techie guy, and that's exactly why we got Sean McSpaden from the Department of Administrative Services, who is a very good techie guy, and then we have Amy Asnard. I don't say Asner, but he's an actor. Yeah, it's Asnard from Multnomah County, and Dave Houghton's back here, right here on my right. And that's kind of be the team that's going to lead you through the demo. And I think that the good news in this is that I think you're going to see some tools that these folks have really put together that's going to feed into the Virtual USA model. But at the end of the day, I think we're going to have leadership in things like developing a policy that helps us facilitate the sharing of databases that are out there right now. People are collecting them. Government entities are collecting them. They've got them. It's all stuff that's there. All we got to do is get the agreements in to use them. And I think that's going to probably take some legislative leadership at some point in the near term or in this next session probably. And I think that's going to have to deal with the governance of how we operate this and make sure everybody's secure and make sure that everybody feels comfortable about sharing this data. So it's kind of a first step in what I see as a policy framework that we're going to need to develop as a state, as the state of Oregon, so we can use this in a broader sense. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the experts and let them lead you through what I think is a rather remarkable program that they put together in a process that they've come together using essentially off-the-shelf stuff. It's not huge investments. It's not millions of dollars. It's basically taking what's out there, putting it in, aggregating it into something that's usable for us at the state level and other emergency management levels so they can better serve the public during an emergency. And that's what this is all about, is creating a situational awareness, making sure that everybody's got the same information and it's accurate information. And that is the key, I think, in all of this. We've learned that through several different exercises, that you can get a lot of information, but it isn't necessarily accurate. And that is really problematic. And so this is one of the tool that I think is going to help us greatly. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Sean and Amy and Dave, and I'm going to slip over to this chair and let them really take you through what's the what this is all about.
Thank you.
Chair Cowan, Vice Chair Freeman, Vice Chair Matthews, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sean McSpaden. I serve as Oregon's Deputy State Chief Information Officer. And I also serve as the Technical Working Group Chair for the Virtual USA Pacific Northwest Pilot for the Technical Working Group. On behalf of Adjutant General Reese, Brigadier General Caldwell, Dave Stuckey, the Deputy Director for Oregon Emergency Management, it's my pleasure to be with you here this morning to give you an update on the Pacific Northwest Pilot and how Oregon fits within that pilot. Just a little bit of background. For the Pacific Northwest pilot, our journey began in Tacoma, Washington in September of 2009. And as Brigadier General Caldwell indicated, our goal of this pilot is to develop a regional information sharing capability for a common operating picture for emergency management. At that meeting in September 2009, the Adjutant Generals for the Pacific Northwest pilot states, Alaska, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, and Washington agreed on our behalf to develop a Pacific Northwest regional pilot demonstration within 1 year. And we are now at the conclusion of that year. And actually, our demonstration, our five-state demonstration, is scheduled for tomorrow morning in the Emergency Communications Center. Representative Cowan, you talked about the timing of the Almsville tornado. Certainly this hearing is great timing in preparation for our demonstration tomorrow. We'll each be in our own Emergency Communications Centers, trying to replicate the environment that we will all be in during regular operations. Idaho will be in their Emergency Communications Center, Montana will be in theirs, and so on. We've done a lot of work over the last year. Certainly, part of that work is just to get organized. We formed executive operations and technical working groups at the regional level across the five states, but also we had to organize here within Oregon. And certainly, one of the primary keys to success for Oregon is collaboration with local governments. And we have here today our primary partners from Multnomah County, Oregon's largest county that represents about 20% of Oregon's population. We've been working together for a year, and it's been a great, great journey. During that period of time, we've also formalized our arrangement with one another. So we've signed a memorandum of agreement. That memorandum really serves as the rules of the road for information sharing across the states, and it also guides our shared access to and use of a national virtual information sharing library. General Caldwell indicated earlier in his testimony that we have been following on the heels of a similar pilot in the Southeast region. There's about 10 states in the Southeast. Alabama and Virginia are the lead states in that particular pilot. They've now moved to phase two and beyond. They've used this capability to respond to the Gulf oil spill that we certainly all saw in the news over the past 6 months or more. And we're successful in using this capability to share information, not only across the states in their region, but also with private sector entities, like British Petroleum, of course, but also Walmart and Home Depot, and suppliers in times of emergency management and emergency response. Having that common operating picture was critical to their success in responding, and certainly in the future it'll be critical to ours. We then have worked in each state, and certainly the latter part of our demonstration will show you Oregon's current version of our common operating picture. It is focused on Multnomah County, but essentially it's a map-based viewer that can be accessed by the web, and you have in your slide deck quite a bit of information about the system, and certainly we're going to have a chance to demonstrate that for you here in a few minutes. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that not only have we had quite a great effort, and it's been very rewarding developing strong partnerships with local governments here in Oregon, but also we've been supported all along the way by Pacific Northwest National Labs up in the Seattle area, and also in Washington, D.C. by the Virtual USA team, which is currently housed within the Department of Homeland Security's Science and Technology Directorate. Certainly, it goes without saying that here in the Pacific Northwest, we're far different than states in the Southeast. I remember when I was a boy, I lived in Maryland, we moved out here to Oregon, and in one day, we traveled across 9 states. Here in Oregon, you'll be lucky if you get to the Idaho border in a good day's drive. So Oregon is the 9th largest state. If you take our entire region together, we cover significant portions of the Pacific Ocean and about 1 million square miles of land. It's quite a daunting task to try to even identify the information you need to share, much less to then turn that into actionable, accurate information that folks can use in emergency management, emergency response across a geography that large. We certainly, as we moved across the last year, recognize that each of the states really do have different capabilities. We all kind of came to the party at different stages in our evolution, and we still are quite different in our profile, both from a technical infrastructure perspective, a geographic information systems and data perspective, and even operationally how we're organized. We certainly all still need dedicated resources, and as General Caldwell indicated, the Department of Homeland Security has provided the majority of the funding here. Over time, we're going to have to figure out how to operationalize this system to support it over time, and I think as more and more of our cities and counties, and certainly at the state, as we see the value of this kind of system will provide, we'll get there. I think another issue has been with the information sharing partnerships and kind of our agreement to agree with one another across the Pacific Northwest. That's been a challenge. It goes without saying that most of our states were homesteaded at some point in time in our history. The traits of autonomy and independence run very, very deep, not just within Oregon, and we all see that as we operate with one another, but certainly across a region this large. It's very difficult to come to common agreement on almost anything, but we've done it. And I think people have put aside parochial interests and have understood that protection of property and lives really takes us to a new level and compels us to share as much as we can, and certainly we need to protect what we must. As the saying goes, to paraphrase it, a picture, and in this case, a common operating picture, and the map that picture to take form is truly worth 1,000 words. This is just a screenshot of the virtual emergency network of Multnomah. We're going to actually demonstrate the system here in a few moments. This has been quite an accomplishment, and again, through our partnership with Multnomah County, we have developed an operational system that is currently in use. Granted, we're in our early stages, but it's in use in Multnomah County, and we've begun to begin to assess how it can be used across the state and within other jurisdictions at the local government level. I have a three-panel slide here. I had hoped to be able to include the Idaho version of this system. I wasn't able to get their screenshot in time. But this just gives you a view that we're not alone here in the Pacific Northwest. And certainly tomorrow, we will be pulling up an Oregon screen, a screen in Washington, D.C. of the Information Sharing Library. And I'll show you what that looks like here in a second. And then the viewers or common operating pictures from each of our partner states tomorrow will be essentially sharing information in near real time, and the goal is to be able to see it pop up on a map on our own system across a million square miles of land. We'll have demonstrated by the close of the session tomorrow that we can in fact share information, we can see one another's information in our own system, and we can act on it if it applies to us. And typically that'll occur on the border regions between Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, and then of course Idaho and Montana. We also have at the bottom right of the slide a system called ERUPT. It goes without saying that emergency management in the Pacific Northwest involves a strong partnership with FEMA Region 10. As you may recall, our former Oregon Emergency Management Director, Ken Murphy, is now FEMA Region 10 Administrator. And he and John Sneed, the former Deputy Director, both work for FEMA Region 10. And they've continued a strong partnership with Oregon and the region in this endeavor, and we're sharing information more and more each day. So it's been a very positive development in regard to our relationship and strengthening relationship with FEMA Region 10. And I won't go into this slide, but generally speaking, I wanted to give you a view of what we're going to be doing tomorrow. We have, in partnership with the Department of Homeland Security, we've gone back to the National Weather Service, found historical radar feeds, historical weather information about the 1996 winter storm. That was a massive storm. It caused all kinds of havoc across the region. It involved snow, floods, high winds, created quite a bit of damage. And so this is a composite view of the entire event. We're going to be seeing on our screens radar and weather information moving from state to state over about three and a half hours. We're going to be moving through different scenarios, high wind scenarios, snow and flood scenarios, and sharing information as much as we can in an exercise that's relevant to that event. We'll be sharing situation reports, we'll be sharing 911 incident information. We'll be sharing information out of the Oregon Emergency Management Ops Center, which is the state's incident management reporting system with our local governments and with the federal government. And so this should give you a general feel of what we're going to see in the Emergency Communications Center and generally what we're going to be doing. And over that 3 hours, each state will have a similar view in their own system, and we hope it turns out successfully. Very briefly, I'll touch on this National Information Sharing Data Catalog or Library. It is termed Virtual USA. As I said, the Department of Homeland Security Science and Technology Directorate is currently the custodian of this system. It's a password-protected system. Each of the Pacific Northwest pilot states have access to it. We all have our own information libraries within which we can post information. We can post website addresses to where our data resides within our own states. We log in. We each, as I said, have a library. We've got a capability to upload information and a capability to share with up to 15 states at this point in time. And I've just kind of clicked on the drop-down menu there, Alaska through Washington here. We also, on this state tab, if you were to click it, there would be a federal tab that includes all the FEMA regions. That includes Department of Homeland Security and other partners. It also includes a private sector tab, as I mentioned, Walmart, British Petroleum, and other private sector entities are expected to join the partnership at times. And this truly has some great future upside in regard to federal, state, local, tribal, and private sector information sharing. This is just a brief screenshot of my library within the system. The concept here is that you load information, others make their libraries available to you. You can add information or delete information from your library. You're not compelled to share information with anyone. You can time box it, only share it for a certain period of time, or you can confine it to a single state with an organ, or share it with the world, whoever has access within that system. And this is just a general viewer that they've included within the Virtual USA Information Sharing Library, so that when you click on a particular data set or website, you can see the information before you download it or go and connect it to your own common operating picture. So it's that way you're not downloading or trying to access information that's not relevant to you. Finally, I want to focus on partnerships. Of course, we've got a 5-state partnership with Alaska, Idaho, Montana, and Washington, and of course our own state. Our federal partners here, FEMA Region 10, Department of Homeland Security, have been our prime partners over time, but I would like to mention the National Guard. Both nationally and here within Oregon, we've been working for the last 6 months or so with Oregon National Guard on a variety of information sharing efforts. And then in terms of our tribal, state, and local government partnerships, you know, our connectivity as a state with our counties and cities is growing. We're building information sharing partnerships with our tribes on a slow but progressive basis. Also, our regional governments have begun to work with us and we with them to share information not just in emergency management and public safety, but in all program areas, natural resources, education, workforce development, and the like. And we've been able to, over time, develop a significant information library, a geospatial information library, that we're the custodian for all of these entities, and we provide it for access by all. And that's one of the critical things General Caldwell mentioned earlier in his presentation. We're leveraging partnerships. We're leveraging data that we already have. We're reusing it for emergency management, and we can reuse it for any other program area of government. So I'll go ahead and close my portion of the presentation with the view of a flooded river. And again, the significance of the partnerships that we've been able to build, the information that we've shared over the last year and will share in the future, is that disasters like this and the emergency response that follows don't neatly confine themselves to one jurisdiction. What starts out in a city moves quickly to a county, moves to a state, then a region, then in some respects, depending on the disaster, to the nation. If we can develop a common operating picture in the state of Oregon, we certainly can do it across our region. We can do it across a region that spans 1 million square miles. A virtual information sharing capability across the nation is certainly within our reach. So at that point, I'd like to turn things over to David Houghton. David serves as the director of Multnomah County's Office of Emergency Management.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, Dave Houghton, Multnomah County Office of Emergency Management. I'm the director there. I'm going to take you back a little bit in history and give you some idea of the genesis of what you're going to see today. In 2008, December of 2008, Portland, and if you know about Portland, you know that when it snows in Portland, generally it goes away in another day or so. But in 2008, we were hit by a series of three fronts that lasted through late December. It was the second largest snowfall on record, and it led the city of Gresham to declare an emergency on December 22nd. I'll never forget that because I was sitting in my dining room, snowbound, on my computer with my cell phone, talking to the emergency manager of Gresham. And he was telling me that the city was ready to declare an emergency. I couldn't get out of my house, and so we had to scramble to patch some things together to start communicating with our county attorney and county officials, because we subsequently declared an emergency in the county. And the reason for this was that Gresham was unable to get to people in need in their city by either their fire, EMS, or police. Responders. They were literally carrying litters up streets and loading patients onto litters and carrying them back down the street. Often their vehicles were stuck in the snow. They couldn't get to the calls in some cases, and it was a very serious and life-threatening situation for them. Later that same day, thank you to the state of Oregon, the Oregon National Guard appeared with 6 Humvee vehicles. 3 of those were ambulance equipped, and crews to run a 24/7 operation. Meanwhile, the city of Portland's transportation and Multnomah County's transportation resources were overwhelmed with snow removal needs. Portland doesn't stock up a lot of snow removal equipment, and when things really come down, it's very difficult to keep up with that. TriMet, major supplier of mass transit, was bogged down in their services in both rail and even their snow priority routes. Meantime, warming shelters for people who are often living outside and the homeless populations were beyond capacity, and new shelters had to be opened in rapid succession in both Portland and Gresham. Churches jumped in to help, opening up their doors and working with their congregation to provide services for the homeless. As the days passed, the warming shelter staff became stressed by the social service needs of some of their residents, and shelter operations had to be moved in the middle of the snow event. And snowbound members of vulnerable populations were unable to get out to get more food or to get replacements for their prescriptions. So it was a pretty serious situation that we were in. If we lived in Minnesota, it probably wouldn't have affected us the same way. But for Portland, the area, it was a very different experience. Throughout this event, and despite multiple phone calls to partner agencies and jumping between various websites, we struggled to obtain and share a common operating picture that would provide us with live weather information. I distinctly remember having to come up out of the basement where our emergency coordination center is located and literally look out the window to figure out what was happening with the weather at that point. The proximity of potential warming shelters, it's very difficult to get clear about how they related to any bus routes that were currently operating or any other priority snow removal routes to make sure that we could get transportation in and out. We had no way to quickly locate deployed resources. Open and closed transportation routes weren't laid out for us to see visually. And then things warmed up, and they warmed up somewhat suddenly, and for a while we were in a potential flood situation. And in that situation, I had no way to quickly obtain flood zones and understand what critical infrastructure might be within those flood zones or what residents might be at risk. So the bottom line for me after that experience was it was unacceptable. It's unacceptable to try to make informed decisions when you don't have a clear common operating picture. And that led to my discussions with, subsequently to my discussions with Multnomah County GIS about the possibility of a GIS-based solution that would provide us and our partners a common operating picture for both planning and response coordination. That in turn has led to collaboration with the state, Office of Emergency Management, and Department of Administrative Services and other state agencies like ODOT and DEQ. And that's important, but it's also really important to understand that the mapping platform that you'll see, and the data that goes into that is driven by the needs at the local level. Because the incidents are local, the response is local, and we are the folks that need to have the data and the information to make good decisions. Thank you.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, at this point I'd like to introduce Amy Esnard. Amy serves as the GIS manager for Multnomah County. In your slide deck, we didn't know today whether or not we would have the time to give a live demonstration, and so we did provide, as a takeaway document, a series of screenshots, some of which you'll see during our demonstration, but certainly others will provide you more of an understanding of the capabilities of the system. And at some point in the presentation, we'll probably revert back to those slides and talk about the tornado that just occurred. We were able to pull out information from the system you're about to see about Almsville, about certainly from a visual perspective, what some of the storefronts looked like a few years ago, and what one of them looks like after the tornado. So with that, I'll turn it over to Amy Esnard.
I'm sure that the news media is very pleased with what you have been able to offer them to cover all of their many hours of coverage, too.
Many hours.
Many.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, my name is Amy Esnard. I am the GIS manager for Multnomah County. It's a pleasure to speak with you about the common operating picture we're creating for emergency response. Mother Nature did throw us a favor in that she gave us a live example of how we can use this application. At Multnomah County, as Dave mentioned, we had lacked not only information but the platform to view information. So as a GIS manager, my first initial response was to provide Dave and his team with the best available data so he can be prepared for an emergency. My team had been leveraging a technology called ArcGIS Server. It is a server-based, web-based technology that allows you to share information over the web. We had spent several months creating this infrastructure, but we had several other regional partners in the Portland metro area that had also been investing in this technology. We had invested in this technology mainly because we have smaller cities and unincorporated areas in Multnomah County that needed this service to be able to view data, and they didn't have the funds to invest in this technology. So with Multnomah County GIS, we are able to serve our smaller cities like Corbett and Troutdale and Wood Village with information that they didn't have access to. With this viewer, it is basically a map, and as Sean said, a picture is worth 1,000 words. A map is worth 1,000 pictures. What we're doing here is we're aggregating data. What I wanted to do was to aggregate data for our emergency management department so that they could be prepared for emergency response, but we had hardly any of this data. We didn't have infrastructure that was more recent than 3 years old. We didn't have hospital or healthcare information, but it was around our area. It was within the metro area, and it was also housed at the state level, but we had no way of accessing it. What we've done here is we've created a common operating picture for emergency response. When we say that, it's because we have acquired several different data sets through partnerships and regional relationships that we have built with this effort. We have been able to display the data that you'll see on the right-hand side of this frame as a emergency response-related data set. This can be applied to anything, really. It could be applied to child care development. It could be applied to a transportation-related, specifically transportation-related viewer, an environmental viewer. This could be really catered to several different types of business processes, but this is focused on emergency response. So what I'd like to do is show you just briefly, as a base map, we have created several different tools at the top of the screen there. We've created an area of concern so that when there's a tornado, we can place a point on the map and we can create a buffer of that area and pull up so much data that is within that buffered area to be able to provide to emergency responders. And we have a few other tools that are basic navigational tools that you'd see in Google Maps, but the beauty about this is that it is actually navigating around state data. The data that you see in the background is some of what we have gotten from the state's geospatial clearinghouse. The state has invested a lot of time and resources in creating the state geospatial data clearinghouse, but it wasn't available in a viewer like this. So now the state is looking at state data, not Google data. It's important to note that we have also explored several different types of data. We have what you call an RSS feed or a GRSS feed. These are live feeds coming from places such as the Oregon Emergency Management Ops Center. They had OEM had a database that was kind of nested within their program. A lot of textual data, a lot of records to sift through. What we've done is what we like to call spatially enabled that data. So when you click on the ops center, you'll see that there will be points on the map. You'll see there are several yellow triangles over there. If you hover over one of them, an emergency manager can quickly see the information related to that point on the map. And if there's no points on the map, they can go home for the day, right? So so really what we were focusing on is quick access to accurate information and enabling those people who need the data to be able to view it efficiently and quickly. So we're running out of I know we don't have a lot of time, so I have three other views I'd like to go over. Before I go there, though, I'd like to point out that this is a secure website. We have the Multnomah County Sheriff is starting to use this now. They're starting to track where homeless camps are. There are several people in our Department of Community and Human Resources that are looking to track where there are shelters, where they can start to staff better. So this is really starting to become a common operating picture for a lot of different business processes. So when I say it's secure, that is what's really getting us the buy-in that we need at Multnomah County. What we're looking at here is we've got a page. When you log in, you'll be able to see certain data. So if you were someone off the street who had no credentials, you would basically be able to just see the base map. But as an administrator, like General Caldwell, he can pull this up and see all the critical data, including drinking water sources, pipelines, a lot of critical infrastructure that other people wouldn't be able to see. I'm going to point out that there's a data and feeds page that we have created. So this is what you call a data library. This is really the backbone, and this is what I believe we're really trying to focus on in this meeting, is that there's a lot of very critical data out there that people aren't sharing, that we need access to in a situation, an emergency situation. What we have here is a data and feeds page that will allow subscribers to either load data directly from this page into their own existing viewer or their desktop application, or they can load data into this page and share their data. So if you were in Almsville and you happen to have some information on new information on where child care centers are, they could load this into the application and other people all across the state and the nation would be able to see that. I'm going to go back to the viewer, and on the second view that we prepared for you, we wanted to show that what we're really looking at is these relationships and partnerships that have really been born out of this virtual ESA effort. What we've done is we've leveraged the technology so that we can share data across states. We have Department of Transportation cameras now from Montana, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. What this has allowed us to do is not only to view the status of other states and across the state regionally, how traffic might be flowing, helping to prepare people like the Oregon National Guard. We did an exercise back in May where we were demonstrating how we can track the military Humvees across borders from Oregon to Washington. This has been a really powerful message here in that this technology is sharing feeds from these states. And this is just one of many feeds that we could share right now. But right now we're just going to show you a little more of these cameras. There's some more cameras in Montana, and these are live. So another really critical aspect of this technology is that it's live data. Emergency managers like Dave, who came to me last year asking for data, usually ask for a paper map, and that's great if you have the staff to be able to provide a paper map. But as you might know, on a weekend, on a Sunday evening, you really don't have a lot of staff to call to print a map, even though Dave could probably twist my arm and I could do something. But really, having the ability to access this from your dining room table when you're snowed in an emergency really allows you to communicate with the region. So I want to go ahead and move to the next slide here, or the next few that we've prepared for you. This last week has been very eventful. Dave contacted me and let me know that this viewer, although it's still in development, was already used with the Multnomah County Sheriff, with the city of Troutdale. The Sandy River was risking a flood event. And really what had happened is that I think that it was reaching a near breach. And what we wanted to do was pull up this area of Troutdale and just show how efficient it is to be able to look at the flood zone area. So what we did is we did a buffer of the FEMA flood zone data that we got from FEMA just a few weeks ago. We can also pull up, if you want to hover over where the City Hall is. Over here. The City Hall is really close to the flood zone. So this would help emergency managers really prepare to respond. So there's other data here. We've got the TriMet bus lines here showing that they actually really go straight into the river. But they're within the flood zone. So being able to do an analysis on the fly, you don't need to have high-end training to look at this. You can actually really efficiently and easily look at this data. And you can share this with other folks as well. So that's the next point I wanted to make, and we'll go to the next view, please, Sean. So what we're going to do here is show you how we can share information. Reporting is a big thing for emergency managers. Being able to share a report on what is going on, what's the situation, how are we going to respond. So what we're going to show you is a demo that we haven't prepared yet. We're going to go through this on the fly with you. What we have is we have an address here for Almsville City Hall, I think, right?
Chair Cohen, members of the committee, actually this is the address for TG Nichols Plumbing. This is the store that was on the news. I think one of the oldest businesses in Almsville that was essentially destroyed.
Just looking across the street from the City Hall.
Yeah. Okay, and we're going to go through the slides.
Great.
So I guess what we're going to do, I'm sorry, change of pace here. We're going to go back to the slides that Sean took some time to put together for you today, and we'll just walk through it. Really, where we're going to start is with an address. A location is a starting point for a lot of emergency response. And what we have is we actually have a specific address. So what we did is we typed in the address here, and it zoomed us to this location. What we have in the background here is aerial photography that will allow us to get a better picture of situational awareness. I believe most of you have probably seen aerial photography by now. So we're zooming into the location here. It is the plumbing supply. Okay. All right, so Sean captured these photos actually from, I think, the Oregonian? Yep.
That's correct. Chair Cowan, members of the committee, these two slides, and again, I just pulled up the system late last evening. Deputy Director Stuckey was in the Emergency Communications Center. Certainly, we didn't want to bother the team as they were working, but just did a few internet searches for, one, the location of the building that was destroyed, TG Nichols Plumbing, and just captured some screenshots from the system itself. This is high level, kind of the first view of imagery that's available within the system. I was then able to drill down using more detailed imagery that we have available to a closer view to the ground. And both of these are, of course, before pictures. You can see the roof there that was once there is now completely destroyed. And one of the key points here is that as we progress, we will have a capability to build partnerships with the Civil Air Patrol, with third-party aerial imagery companies who, for FEMA Region 10 and for other government entities, have struck agreements that after any disaster, they will fly over the area within 3 days and provide the jurisdiction with the information they need to help in the recovery effort, help in processing FEMA reimbursement requests, insurance requests, those kinds of things. So this, again, was just to give you a view of the kind of information that is available to us now from a variety of sources, and certainly at some point will be available directly within the Venom system.
Could I interrupt you with a question?
Certainly.
Just ran to my mind. For the purposes of this demonstration, you then went to the media and pulled up a real-time picture for all practical purposes. We know that they have their helicopters out there certainly more quickly than within 3 days. Do you have any working relationship with the information that the media is providing the general public on television in sort of real time these days? I can understand the documentation purposes for reimbursement from FEMA and some of those kinds of things, but I'm trying to make sure that government keeps up with what the rest of our population is viewing as it happens.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, I'll answer briefly from my own experience about 10 years ago in the year 2000 project. If you may recall, about 10 years ago, we had the computer scare where we had to fix all our computers. We came to Oregon Emergency Management at that time in a command center, and frankly, at that time, 10 years ago, our best real-time source was CNN, was the local news, etc. I would turn it now to General Caldwell or
I'm sorry, I don't want to distract from your presentation.
No worries, to talk about what sources they have at this point in time.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, frankly, we watch the TV just like everybody else. We do record it. We do have the ability to pull it down. We have some limited capability with our aviation assets to get some real time, but I'd say it's limited at this point. There's some improvements coming to our Black Hawk fleet that we're going to expand that greatly. We haven't got the technology figured out how to really pump it into the EOC, ECC, JOC, our whole operation yet, because we're just reaching that right now. But frankly, we watch the tube just like everybody else. Yesterday in Almsville, when I was out there, like I told the mayor, I said, if you just get the media folks that are here to pick up one piece of debris, it'd be cleaned up in about an hour, because there was enough media out there to stop traffic. They were stopping traffic. But that information is very important, and I think that we have, you know, that's part of the situational awareness situation that you've got to have, and the best place to get it are these folks that are already out there pumping it out in the airways. So I think a better example, though, of one thing that, and I think you could show it on this thing, Sean, but the shelters, for instance, yesterday, we had received word in the ECC that we had a shelter location. That was initial. Within an hour, there was a second shelter stood up. We aired three different reports on the media of where the shelters were, and they were, one was right, I believe, one was semi-right, and one was completely wrong. So that was three different stations, and we were watching those stations. Well, we immediately then, and we were, you know, as the county posted that out of the fire hall, or actually the city, they said, here it is. They put it on in their, in that system. We pick it up through our systems, and then you could aggregate it and put it all out for everybody. And we could share that with the media, and we can have that sort of thing. They were stubby penciling the thing, then standing up there in front of a live TV shot, putting out bad information. And of course, we were working back through our public affairs officer to get back to their main station and say, you need to correct this. This is not accurate. And but, you know, once it's shot down, it's like recovering a bullet when you shoot it. You don't get it back. It's already downrange. And that's what happened yesterday in this small little Almsville, 1,500 people or whatever it was. We had just bad information, which is exactly what this is all about, is getting the right information to the right people, particularly the decision makers. Because if decision makers don't have that right information, then resources are misdirected, slowness in response, and all of those things occur. And I think that's exactly what this brings to the fight, is that we can look at the decision makers can actually fill the pipeline full of the assets that are needed, direct them to the right place, and get them to the right people, and the information gets out to the public the same.
Thank you for that. I don't raise the question facetiously. I was in the County Emergency Management Operations Center during the 96 storm events that you described earlier. I am acutely aware of public demand for information and the need for that to be accurate and to be well coordinated with what we're doing. So I think it's an important piece when we talk about our whole response and informational system, that we're adequately coordinating with the media who we know are going to be sharing very quickly information with the public, and we can't wait a few hours or a few days to make sure that we're coordinating that.
If you don't mind, I'll just add one little anecdotal story about when you were living in Elgin, yes, Madam Chair. And you probably remember the ice floods and the storms we had in Union County in those days. I get a call at about 11 o'clock in the evening from the governor's office at the time, and it was Governor Attia. And his chief of staff said, the governor wants to talk to you. And I thought that was interesting. And I said, okay. And next thing I know, the governor's on the line, and he said, Caldwell, I understand you're in the National Guard. And I said, yes, I am, county commissioner as well, and said, well, I got a report you're taking your tanks down to Elgin in that throat cut, you know, where right there by the drinking fountain, you know where I'm talking.
I do.
And the ice is jammed up there, and you're taking one of your tanks down there and start shooting the ice flow. Is that correct? I said, well, Governor, no, that is not correct. Number one, I've got tanks, but I don't have ammunition for them. We don't keep that here at the local level. And he said, well, one of your county commissioners put that out on the TV. I just saw it on TV at the 11 o'clock news. And I thought to myself, well, geez, why don't we just order a B-52 and just carpet bomb the thing and just take care of the ice. So again, bad information going out from a fellow county commissioner who hadn't coordinated it with anybody. And, you know, it's 25 years ago. But the point is that bad information travels so fast. And, I mean, this went at 11 o'clock to 11:15, I'm on the phone with the governor, and we're in the middle of a major ice storm and terrible incident that we had. It was a massive disaster for us, and yet that information made it in light speed, and that was 25 years ago. Well, it's better today. You can get there even quicker today. So information is absolutely essential.
That was the reason I raised the question. And since I appear to have forced a little break in your presentation, would you bear with me for just one more moment? Mm-hmm. I have been made aware that Representative-elect Hicks is here with us today, and if you'd like to join us at the podium, you're more than welcome. Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So, I do appreciate your question, because that's one of the things that I was going to touch on, in that we wouldn't be able to show you a location on a map if we didn't have a data share agreement with our county assessor. So this is all about the governance of data sharing. Without a governance of stewardship and data accountability, you really wouldn't have a common operating picture. Or you would, but it would be full of really bad data. Or questionable data. So what I'd like to do is just go through the rest of these to give you an idea about the functionality of this viewer. And again, I want to point out that this is a viewer, but there are other components of this. If you're a small town, let's say in Almsville, and you don't have the technology to be able to create your own map or your own viewer, we have created this at the local level with National Department of Homeland Security funds so that this is available to these folks in these smaller areas, freely available. But if you have your data and you have your widgets, we like to call them, you can take them from our feeds page that you saw, and you can load them into your own viewer. So we're really trying to build a seamless communication here. So I'm just going to go ahead and show you the rest of these. Going through the area of concern is what we're calling it. We're allowing emergency operators to select a point on the map where they want to target. And let's say there's an area, that's okay, an area that they'd like to find. Now, this is just GIS 101 for y'all. What we've done is we created an area of concern within a 5-mile radius. So we selected an area on the map. With a quick click of the button, we selected the distance. And then you'll see on the bottom left that you could choose the data that you wanted to see. So maybe you don't want to see where all the restaurants are. Maybe you don't want to see what parks are overlaying or maybe some other fish presence in a stream. But maybe you want to see where the critical infrastructure is and where the shelters are. So up on the top right, Sean had created a buffer that is selecting all the police departments and the churches within that area. And then on the bottom right, he selected a name for this report. And then the end result of this is this PDF that you can email to each other. So this is a PDF that emergency, I think Sean might have communicated with folks yesterday, showing them where this is located. And then the next slide will show you the records associated with this. So all the information within that area per tax lot. So you can see what residential information, what commercial information is overlaid within that area. It's very powerful.
Chair Cohen, members of the committee, 2 points. Certainly this is a system in development, and so we need to work with operators to determine what fields of information they'd like to ultimately see in these reports. This is simply all the fields of information that are available around the record associated with the police department or the records associated with a church. We just wanted to show you the output at this point in time. The other importance of identifying churches in this particular event is that typically it's churches that are converted to shelters, churches that are converted to donation centers. And so in this case, that's exactly what happened in this last view that we showed you a few minutes ago. So ultimately, an operator at Oregon Emergency Management or in the local government Emergency Management Operations Center might use this tool to identify what is around a particular event, whether it be schools, whether it be nursing homes, whether it be fire stations, police, or in this case, churches that might serve as either collection points for volunteers or for the media, or in the case of Mountain View Wesleyan Church, might serve as a Red Cross shelter, or in the case of Allied Waste in Almsville, that particular location served as a donation collection point. And I have identified where we began with this particular scenario at the bottom center of the map at T.G. Nichols Plumbing right on 615 Main Street. This last slide is something that we've been working on. It's a planning capability. Won't go into too much detail, but suffice it to say that this particular tool or capability within the system is meant for emergency operators both within a single jurisdiction or across multiple jurisdictions, state, local government level, to be able to look at a map, to be able to stage resources, essentially using this palette of icons, of lines, and charting capability to create locations of events, to stage what, to first aid centers and the like around a particular incident, and to let their counterparts in other jurisdictions know where they plan to stage resources and where people should go in an event. So this is just an example of what's to come in the future.
Any questions?
Great. Thank you, Chair Cowan, and thank you guys for this presentation. You talked a lot about all the great data, and from my local government experience, I know a little bit about the GIS mapping. My question is really about any kind of concern around who has access to the data and how you protect that. There's people in my district that get freaked out when I send them a birthday card. They want to know how come I know when their birthday is. So I'm just curious on how you kind of manage through that.
Chair Cowan and Representative Freeman, members of the committee. That is really the backbone of this application. People don't want to share information if they think it's going to be all over the internet. So what we've done is we've created a memorandum of agreement with folks so far, such as DEQ, Oregon Department of Transportation, State Health, TriMet. And what that agreement does is it specifies the level of use of the data within this application. So when you create an account for a new user, their credentials will determine what level, what data they'll be able to see. With this technology, we have an ability to, in the back end, create some sort of security so that certain data will only be allowed with certain settings, to be shown within certain settings. So the combination of the agreements and the technology will allow us to really control that.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, just a quick follow-up. Also, within the system that we just showed you, we had already logged in. It's important to note there's a username, password that is required, and folks have to go through an authorization process to even get access to the mapping system at this point in time. Across the country, the state of Virginia was likely the first state that developed a capability like this. They initially put out a public viewer, quickly became apparent to them that they needed something that was more secure. I think they still do provide high-level information to the public and get information from the public, but they have now, for the emergency management community, secured that system, and we certainly intend to do the same here in Oregon.
Thank you.
Representative Boone?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions. And wondered if, like in our area, our local fire departments track people who are homebound, maybe disabled or something, so that when we have a disaster, they go check on them or they call them or whatever. And wondered if that is applicable to this, or is that something that's being done?
Thank you for the question. Chair Cowan and Representative Boone, committee. We are talking with, in Multnomah County, we're talking with our Department of Community Human Services about that. In a large jurisdiction, the complexity, you know, gets more complex. And so they have they tried at one point a voluntary, you know, sort of self-registration web-based portal. That particular system, I think, is under revision now. But we've been in discussions with them about how to, I'm learning these words, geocode registration information so that we can do just what you describe in a very large community where we don't necessarily have the personal relationships that you might find in a smaller community. So yes, the answer, short answer is yes.
And my follow-up? And is there any collaboration with existing mapping resources? And everybody knows me, you'll know this, I'm talking about seafloor mapping. And it goes onshore with the LIDAR. So we've mapped in the process of completing our mapping of the coastline, which gives you mostly the physical stuff, but it will also show roads and structures and things like that. So I'm wondering, and the other second part of that, anybody who knows me know that I just really agree with sharing all data like that. So if you haven't, suggest it, and if you do, congratulations.
Thank you. So Chair Cowan, Representative Boone, members, Yes, we have been looking with, I think, a 360 view with this. We call this a proof of concept, so we haven't really been able to dive that deep yet, but we've been looking at this as a 360 view that it's not just urban areas, it's not just rural areas, it can also be coastal. I'm from Cannon Beach, and I have a passion for knowing what's going on in the coastal area. Having known that DEQ has a lot of critical information, and so does OSU, we started to work with them just finding out what information they might have. DEQ has some really critical information, but so does OSU. We are continually searching for data. People are starting to know about this project, and they're starting to contact us, and that is the greatest thing. If we don't know about it, we won't be able to show it. So we're really trying to advocate for that. So we're trying to find representatives and advocates so that we can actually start to really build those bridges and start to share information into the coastal zone as well.
There's a, I'll just finish my follow-up with, it's called, I think it's OregonOcean.info, and they'll have four or five different areas of mapping. And I'm pretty sure you can just get it from there straight across. So,
did you have some additional?
I did, Chair Cohen, Representative Boone, members of the committee, very briefly. It's worth noting that one of the key points of collaboration and information sharing for us at the state in partnership with local governments is the Oregon Geographic Information Council. We have, through executive order, actually through Governor Kitzhaber, Governor-elect Kitzhaber, established the Oregon Geographic Information Council in 2000 for just this purpose. That council has federal members, local government members, tribal members, and state agency members, including land conservation development. We have Oregon State University and the university systems represented. LIDAR data is one of the primary data sets that we are working on now. You know, certainly, as I said earlier, this is a system focused on emergency management, and certainly the information you're talking about is relevant to emergency management on the coast. But also, this kind of information sharing, this concept, these methods are applicable to any program area, and we certainly intend to do that.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to see that we are preparing ourselves, because I just came back from the Gulf Coast, and FEMA is not a real popular thing down there, to be candid with you. And obviously from Katrina, it wasn't very adequate as well. So the better we're prepared, first of all, we're the ones that live here. Second of all, we can react quicker. By the time FEMA gets involved, usually the disaster is not only passed, but we've probably started rebuilding. So I commend you and encourage you to continue on this basis, especially in the regionalization process, because we're going to have to do the work. We're going to have to do the heavy lifting. We're going to have to be the first line of defense, because according to the people in the Gulf, by the time FEMA gets there and maybe, just maybe, they kind of indicated that they were a hindrance at times. So keep up the work.
Thank you.
Ken Murphy now.
Representative Wyden.
They have Ken Murphy.
Just a couple quick, Madam Chair. Thank you. Is that program written by LC Geospatial you're using there? No?
So, Chair Cohen, Representative Wyden, members, this program is based on a Microsoft front-end application called Silverlight. You might have heard of Flex. It's Adobe Flex. It's a sister application. It's an API. It's an application that allows you to build APIs. We hired a contractor with our Homeland Security grant to build this. They are called the Gartrell Group. And we used all of the technology, all the software and the hardware that Multnomah County had already had in place. That software is from ESRI, Environmental Systems Research Institute. And they create most of the GIS mapping software that we use, and most of the people in the Portland metro area that we share information with use.
And I'll allow one follow-up. So far, I haven't heard, understood a word she said. So if you want some of this technical detail, you may have to get it directly. Go ahead.
Hi. Chair Cowan, Representative Widener, members of the committee. It's worth noting that the Gartrell Group is a Portland, Oregon company. It's a small business, family-owned, and we've had a great working relationship with them. They've done a great job. I would tell you across the region, I serve as the technical working group chair for the Pacific Northwest West region. The product that they've helped us build is the envy of the region. We have been blessed with being able to get at this early and continue to work on it over time, and I think we have one of the more mature viewers in our region at this point in time, so we're very happy with the work they've done.
That said, did you have one follow-up here?
Yes. We saw kind of a brief overlay and stuff. Do you have it down to the piping level, escape hatches and buildings, things like that? Because that's some of the stuff that I've seen in other software programs, that way for sewage leaks, things like that, where you can get to them quickly.
I see what you're talking about.
Or in Homeland Security issues with terrorists.
Sure. Chair Cowan, members of the committee, Representative Widener, we do not yet have data within the system down to that level. That said, we are working with a private sector company called Bentley Systems that deals with facility mapping, campus information systems. So we're just dipping our toes, so to speak, into that particular area. I would say that one of the most progressive organizations where facility mapping below and above ground is the University of Oregon. We're working with Andre LeDuc, the emergency management coordinator down at the University of Oregon. They have done that kind of mapping for the University of Oregon campus, and we certainly expect to be able to incorporate information that they have into this system over time.
One more, Madam Chair.
Very quickly, we are going to need to move on.
ALSI Geospatials in Corvallis, they actually have a lot of this information. I think they've done stuff, well, they do the ticket writing software for the city of Portland, and they have all of it for Corvallis and different places like that, so they might be a good resource for you to contact.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, as a wrap-up.
Yes, and if I could help shape your wrap-up.
It'll be quick.
A bit. You had mentioned about some legislative needs around governance of data sharing. So if you could include that in your wrap-up.
That is exactly my wrap-up.
I thought so.
We started this discussion, and I ask you to keep in the back of your mind the policy considerations that we think we're going to need to get the legislature to at least help shape and adopt. We're doing it now with memorandums of agreement. It's working fine, I think, at this stage of the game. But at some point, as we get into more complex and more users and more partners, I think it's going to be a good policy decision by the legislature to say, this is how we want this policy to go. We want it to look a certain way. We want people to play in this game. And we also want to protect their rights, and we want to protect so they don't get that birthday card on the 7th of January saying, how did you know where my birthday was? So I think all those things are important. We're not there yet to present to you to say, this is what we think the policy should be. And I think a lot of that has to do with the interaction that we're having with our partners. And as we see this partnership come together, and we have the MOAs, and as we see how that group and the other group that State Geospatial, I forget the acronym, but
it's okay.
It's a big one.
I won't remember it either.
Yeah, you wouldn't remember it anyway. I think as that group also, because they deal with the folks that really are dealing with, you know, that collect this data, put it together, I think we'll be coming to you at some point, and I can't give you a date certain, but as we see this shape together, we'll come back to you and ask for more, or ask you to help us shape that policy so everybody knows what we're after, what we're doing, and how this is going to play eventually in the big scheme.
So you don't anticipate that this need in the upcoming session? Are you looking
a
year
ask,
or two down the road,
the
or just give us a hint?
What do you think, Amy?
And if that puts you on the spot, I didn't intend to do that, so I'm just shaping a work plan.
Chair Cohen, members of the committee, I'm going to defer that to Sean. He would be able to answer that as a CIO for the state of Oregon.
So as the, thank you, Amy, for the promotion. As the deputy state CIO for the state of Oregon, I would say that I would ask that you look to and talk with Representative Nathanson as part of her task force on government efficiency and effectiveness. She has, I believe, been working on a legislative concept around the public records law to define what information should, in fact, be protected from disclosure and what information should be shared. And that would be probably the most accelerated way to begin to address this issue. We do not have a legislative concept prepared for this committee or for others to consider.
That's probably a very appropriate direction, and I'll be happy to do that. I will follow up with Representative Nathanson. I certainly do have some security concerns because I don't care if you send your birthday cards, but if some of those detailed maps show up on the evening news, I think we have some issues to deal with. So I do think we have to address this. Great. Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I also understand the Attorney General has a task force that's rewriting the public records laws as we speak. So there, I believe from the Department of Justice, there will be legislation.
Okay. I'm not sure that will deal with all of the issues here, but that we need to coordinate. Okay.
We thank
you very
much.
Much. I appreciate your time this morning.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Representative-elect Hicks, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
You bet. We need a little bit of setup time for our next presentation, so I think that we will move forward our work session on the legislative concepts. If that isn't, if we can coordinate these two things, if we need to just take a break, we will do that as well.
Just do it.
Okay.
Thing through.
Will that, from staff's perspective, will that work if we do both? Okay. All right. Then I will open a work session for the purpose of the introduction of legislative concepts, and I think in front of each of you, you have the summary page of those. Couple of comments. First of all, to remind the committee that it is generally accepted practice that we get support for the introduction of these, that in no way commits anyone on the committee to how they might vote as the hearings and the discussion process develops. But I asked Tom Mann to join us for this because one of my concerns when I went through the list of legislative concepts is that I found it difficult, at least for me, to relate the LC numbers to the pieces of legislation that this committee worked very hard to sort of review all of the three task forces and decide what of their concepts should come out as bills, as joint memorials, which maybe weren't ready for prime time, and then there are some others on the list that had to be, because of timelines, had to be presented earlier to Legislative Council, and so they may fall outside of some of that work that we did, and I don't want to lose the efforts that we put in. Now, and just for clarification's sake, are these going to be the correct LC numbers then, or will...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes.
Okay. We had a little glitch in terms of which body they were going to be introduced in. So, given you a little warning, could you just very quickly tell the committee which of these LCs relate to which task force in those discussions?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank
Madam
you.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Mann. I'm with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. What you have in front of you are LCs that were generated primarily from the three task forces, the Task Force on Veterans Reintegration, the Task Force on Women Veterans Health Care, and the Legislative Task Force on Veterans Transportation. Let me quickly kind of go through these. These are new LC numbers for me as well, because it's the first time I'm seeing them. So LC-257 is not one of ours. That is an emergency management one, it looks like to me. It's the first time I've seen that one.
Yeah.
LC-2253 comes from the Reintegration Task Force. And the Reintegration Task Force did that one just in case it did not end up in the ODVA budget. It would end up as a separate bill for an up or down vote. LC-3104 is a Reintegration Task Force bill. LC-3105 comes to you from the Women Veterans Healthcare Task Force. LC-3106 comes to you again from the Women Veterans Healthcare Task Force. And I draw your attention to LC-3106 and LC-3110. I believe they're the same. And I have that problem in the Senate set as well. I don't know how both those got drafted because they're the same resolution.
And you're not able to narrow this in terms of what the committee's recommendation is.
I am able to do that.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
The first two reintegration ones I mentioned, 2253 and 3104, were ones that the work group decided should go forward. The 3105 joint memorial also was okay. The 3106 also is a joint memorial for the Women Veterans Healthcare Bus. That was okayed. 3107 was an early bill, meaning we had to put it in April before the task force even came up with its findings, and it was a placeholder bill.
Okay.
3108 was a transportation task force early bill that was put in April before that task force did its findings.
Okay.
3109 was a Women Veterans Healthcare Task Force bill that was okayed, another resolution, or memorial in this case. Turning the page. 3111 came from the Women Veterans Healthcare Task Force. This was one that was okayed. It does have a fiscal of $250,000, and when I spoke with the chair about this, her advice was don't stop bills that have fiscals just because they have fiscals. Maybe you need to have the discussion, and we are working offline to try to do this without a fiscal.
Okay.
3113 also was okayed. This was to develop a outreach to women veterans. It ended up with a fiscal, which kind of surprised me, but this was that the department was going to continue to do outreach to women veterans, which is something we do internally anyway.
Okay.
LC-3114, another memorial. This came from the Transportation Task Force. This was an early bill, a little tricky. It talks about hospitals that are seeing veterans on emergency cases that are not in the VA system, transporting that veteran to the VA, and the hospital not getting reimbursed for that transport.
We did talk about that. Yeah.
Little different. LC-3115 is an early bill. This was this was making sure that if you're a victim of military sexual trauma, that you didn't have to see the VA if you wanted to see a private doctor, and VA would pay. This was an early bill we put in as a placeholder bill during that April production. This 3116 deals with the veteran's preference. This was a bill that came in very late that a work group worked on, your committee administrator, myself, and LC. Our departments received a number of phone calls regarding the current language in the preference law. A number of local jurisdictions have said that it doesn't apply to them, the way they interpret it. And there is some confusion about the language in the current statute. So LC agreed that they would redraft the statute to be very clear that it applied to all jurisdictions of public employment, the preference laws. And that's what that bill does.
All right.
And that was from reintegration. 3117 was a bill that was okayed. This was exporting expertise in post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, military sexual trauma, making sure that the VA can doing continuing education for private sector doctors, clinicians, counselors, so that they could learn about that, so when they see veteran clients, they could also provide that kind of health care. Because currently in the private sector, those doctors aren't trained in those type of things. They're seeing veterans, and veterans aren't getting the holistic care they might be able to get otherwise.
Did that come out of a task force?
I'm sorry, it did. That one came out of the Women Veterans.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Women
but
Veterans
I just
Healthcare
wanted to
Task
be sure.
Force. Okay. Yes, ma'am. LC-3118. This was a interesting new work group discussing when a veteran leaves service and has whatever military specialty they have and whatever training they have, ensuring that the education credits from that schooling they took in the military crosswalks to the community colleges in a consistent manner. The Oregon University system uses a system called the ACE system to do that. The community colleges, some use it, some don't use it. Some will give you 5 credits, some will give you 2 credits. We wanted a consistent process. So this is a bill that came from the Reintegration Task Force, but it was a late bill. This was in a late LC.
Okay.
LC 3114 was an early submission from the Reintegration Task Force. It was meant to have the military and the Pentagon look at cultural barriers to active duty and veterans self-identifying with post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, physical injury, military sexual trauma, because we know that at the top levels of the Pentagon, there's lots of encouragement, but we know at the company commander level and the XO level that their issue is readiness, and there's friction between self-identifying as they're being, soldiers are being told to, and the culture of suck it up, drive on, that you have at the company level. So we, this was a resolution, and from reintegration.
Okay. Thank you.
Very welcome.
3107, which was a late addition, is that anything that you know about?
Yes, 3107, actually, we had originally discussed 3107 as a way to incentivize.
I'm sorry. It was just added to the other list, it's apparently.
Okay, 3107, just to incentivize local.
My mistake. Folks. I had it as an extra on one list and not the other. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Freeman.
I want to ask a procedural question, okay. If that's okay, Madam Chair. Before we do this, can I?
You can, and which question would you like me to take first? Your procedural question.
Mine's over here.
Huh?
Mine was to Tom, but.
Okay. One sec.
Okay. My procedural question is, since the committees for the House have not been established yet, is it procedurally correct to go ahead and adopt these into this committee?
Yes.
You've already checked into that. And
My understanding is that procedurally the correct direction is to adopt them into the existing Veterans Committee, and in wherever those responsibilities lie, they will then move
it'll
on.
Trans-
is
okay.
That correct?
Madam Chair, I believe we will be forwarding into the next legislative session.
Yeah, okay.
And it would be up to the leadership.
Well, true. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
This gets them into the process
okay,
as committee
good.
Bills addressed, introduced at this point, and then they'll still go through the same assignment
great.
Process. Representative Widener.
Just real quick. Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, you think 3106 and 3110 looks like it just urges Congress to fund a mobile health care, and the other one's women's mobile health care. You think that's the difference between the two? Or are they the exact same?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener. It was the exact same concept. The only mobile care that the task force talked about was a women veterans health care to outreach, especially to rural women veterans in Oregon. And so we really only needed one of those LCs. If you were to pass both, we could use the second one as a vehicle for something should something come up during session.
Those issues will get ironed out through the process. Representative Escobar.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, did we have anything come in on two issues? One is that I would urge our congressional people to do dedicated funding for the administration, the Veterans Administration, instead of discretionary funding, because I think that's very important that we get dedicated funding for our veterans, and it would coincide with the number of veterans that we have in the theater and coming home. And the second thing is, did we talk anything on these committees about paying for the it really bothers me that a veteran in Lakeview has to jump on a bus and go to Portland. That still bothers me.
There was some discussion about PFER.
Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, I remember your bill from last session about the dedicated funding and the federal VA on the VHA side, the hospital side. They actually did early funding. Instead of doing the two-year behind funding, they did dedicate some funding. That's an issue that's still being worked by Congress and our congressional delegation. I can tell you that our congressional delegation has been very engaged with us on these task forces, and I will personally go back today to Senator Wyden's office, which has been very responsive on this very issue of dedication, because I've been following it. On your second question about transportation, the Transportation Task Force has determined an infrastructure to provide veteran rides to and from medical appointments, and we've been working with the VA hospitals. Portland VA Hospital recently took on 5 of the task force recommendations from the Transportation Task Force, including you can solve this problem 2 ways: get the veteran to their health care or get the health care to the veteran. VA has promised that they're going to work on getting more health care to the veteran through telehealth, through the C-Box, various means. So we're working that very aggressively.
Thank you.
And certainly we can move other issues forward as the need arises, but these are the ones that have been discussed as committee bills. So, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Cowan, I move the following LCs be introduced as committee bills: LC 257, LC 2253, LC 3104, LC 3105, LC 3106, LC 3108, LC 3109, LC 3110, LC 3111, LC 3113, LC 3114, LC 3115, LC 3116, LC 3117, LC 3118, LC 3144, and finally LC 3107.
Representative Freeman moves that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills: LC 257, LC 2253, LC 3104, LC 3105, LC 3106, LC 3108, LC 3109, LC 3110, LC 3111, LC 3113, LC 3114, LC 3115, LC 3116, LC 3117, LC 3118, LC 3144, and LC 3107. Is there any further, is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, these measures are introduced as committee bills. Thank you. We needed to get that taken care of. Are we ready to go with the next part, or do we need to take a brief, very brief break before we go into the next presentation? Everybody's good? All right, please
move it.
We know that you're going to take care of this while I can move.
That's right. Let's get them going.
Are we done? Oh, we're the next one. We're not
done. Chris, I've been friends for 10 years.
Great.
Three guys from our area.
Thank you for joining us this morning. In the interest of timely discussions, it has recently been made aware to us that terrorism planning and response, potential terrorism threats, are still timely and issues that we do need to talk about. So we've asked this group of individuals to join us today to talk and just sort of remind us of the state's planning efforts and preparedness when these unfortunate kinds of incidents do occur. So thank you for your time and willingness to come today.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Military Department and also the Interim Director of Office of Emergency Management. Is today with us, or before your committee, is Superintendent Oregon State Police Brown and also Sean Rydell from the Department of Justice. I unfortunately got a slip down the hall because we have one of those money issues up just down with your colleagues. So I'm going to turn our portion over to Dave, and these two gentlemen here are far more capable than I'll ever be in discussing what this is, the topic before you today. So with that, if you have any questions, give them to my deputy.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
For those of you who don't know me, my name is Sean Riddell. I'm Chief Counsel of the Oregon Department of Justice, Criminal Justice Division. along with being the prosecutor investigative arm of the Oregon Department of Justice, I also supervise the criminal intelligence apparatus for the state, and that includes the Oregon Terrorism Information Threat Assessment Network, or the Fusion Center. Yeah, here is our mission. It's located on page 2, or the back of page 2 of the handout in front of you. It's to protect the citizens of Oregon from terrorism and criminal activity by providing all crimes criminal information sharing clearhouse for federal, state, local, and tribal law enforcement agencies. Here's where I go off script. This is what the Fusion Center does. If you've read the 9/11 Commission report, there's several after-action items in the back of the 9/11 Commission report. One of them is fusion centers. Before 9/11, there were 7 fusion centers throughout the country. There are currently 72 fusion centers throughout the country. And the after-action report from the 9/11 Commission report doesn't go so far as to say if there were fusion centers around the country, we could have avoided 9/11, but it said it would have helped. And this is how they suggest it would have helped. All around the country, if you remember, the terrorists were receiving flight training. They were operating off of cash money. They had several contacts with local and state law enforcement agencies. In fact, several of the flight schools reported to their local law enforcement agencies, hey, we're noticing suspicious activity. And they had other patterns also, where they came from, ports of entry, where they met up, Germany, and the like. Before there were fusion centers, there was no way for both state, local, law enforcement agencies to communicate this sort of information. Now, that's what fusion centers do. We fuse information. When I first started about a year and a half ago, I was reading one of the bulletins, and a local law enforcement agency noticed foreign nationals researching or inquiring how they can learn to be locomotive conductors. So that local law enforcement agency, through their state fusion center, sent out an inquiry, is anyone else seeing this pattern of activity? In order to identify the tactics, techniques, and procedures of a possible terrorist threat. There are two types of fusion centers. There are the investigative fusion centers, and then there's the information sharing fusion centers. We are an information sharing fusion center. We are not an investigative fusion center. We don't take part in any proactive investigations. If you read the book Securing the City, or if you ever go to the Phoenix or Arizona Fusion Center websites, or the New York City Fusion Center website, or the New Jersey Fusion Center website, you'll notice they're an active law enforcement agency. They're out there looking for terrorist threats. In Phoenix, they consider the drug trafficking organizations a terrorist threat. They're out there actively looking for this stuff. We provide information and spend a lot of time on education. Here are our goals: is to identify, prevent, detect, disrupt, and assist in the investigation of terrorism-related crimes by providing an efficient, timely, and secure mechanism to exchange critical information between law enforcement agencies at all levels, state executive leadership, government agencies, and our public and private sector partners. Here's a history of some terrorist activity in Oregon, I'm sure you're all aware of. Why Oregon? This is up for debate, but we consider ourselves a soft target. Fusion center types, we talked about that already, and of course the all-important funding question. As of January 1, everyone in the fusion center or works in the fusion center will be federally funded. Excuse me. There will be no general fund dollars. I caught someone's attention. There will be no general fund dollars supporting the fusion centers. It'll be a combination of UASI funds, a combination of funds from the Oregon Military Department, which comes through us through federal government, and HIDA funds, High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area funds, to pay for this apparatus. These are some of the requests for information, some of the stats that we have for 2010. Of particular importance for the situational awareness or officer safety publications. If there is a particular individual that is a particular danger to officer safety, or there's a particular tactic or technique or procedure that we're noticing gangs or organized crime or drug trafficking organizations use that put state troopers and other law enforcement officers in trouble, we get those awareness bulletins out real fast. We're made up of an advisory board. Here are our members. And currently, these are all the agencies that participate and share information with us through the Fusion Center. We have two physical locations. We refer to it as one Fusion Center, but we have two physical locations. one here in Salem. You're more than welcome to come come take a look. The coffee's always hot. It's not good, but it's hot. And then we have one up in Wilsonville. There, they frequently don't have coffee. I don't know why. But I'll be, if you let me know ahead of time, I'll make sure it's there. And that's supported through the UASI funds, the Urban Area Security Funds. Barring any questions, that ends my presentation in the Fusion Center.
Quick question about
Absolutely. Representative Freeman.
Great. Thank you, Chair Cowan. As you described the Fusion Center and the ability to communicate across agencies, I see in your last slide you had ICE, the immigration folks, written there. So is it my belief that that is a participating agency and that all levels of law enforcement can communicate on immigration issues?
Chair, Representative Freeman, the participating agency, the phrase participation is defined by the agency. In other words, for instance, the most recent attack or most recent investigation headed up by the FBI, right? They didn't share any of that information with anybody else, right? However, they participate in the Fusion Center and frequently share information with us, but that particular investigation they chose not to share with anyone. ICE, similarly, they share information as they see fit. And what they think is appropriate to share with local and state agencies. Okay. Did I answer your question?
Can I just follow this a little bit
more?
Let me give an example, and maybe that's a better way to get to this. Let's say a Douglas County sheriff pulls over some folks on the freeway for any given reason, probable cause. Not just for any reason, but for probable cause.
A bad taillight.
Very good. And they have a question as to the immigration status of the individuals in the vehicle. Do they have access to that information through the Fusion Center?
They can send an inquiry through the Fusion Center, and the Fusion Center then can reach to our ICE point of contact and inquire as to the immigration status of the individual. There are other the superintendent can speak to this more clearly. There are other more efficient manner in define that information. That, you know, what that would be referred to as tactical intelligence, mm-hmm. you know, on the spot momentary intelligence. And why that is something we could provide, there's more efficient ways to find that out. We're more of the operational and strategic intelligence, you know, more of the bigger picture trends, big blue arrow kind of stuff.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I applaud the efforts of the Fusion Center, and I've 11 years law enforcement now, fire for the last 14. I'm curious, are there participating agencies in the fire service as well? Oftentimes, as first responder, we're going on a lot of these calls too. So when you talk about situational awareness, are there things that perhaps you could share, maybe not in the law enforcement realm, but more as a first responder, where fire could be partners in this as well?
Chair, Representative Matthews, excellent question. In fact, we were just talking about that in the back of the room. And, you know, a lot of, you know, we're moving to a system now, on the Homeland Security Information Network system, that would allow particular portals. There would be an emergency management portal. There would be a law enforcement portal. We've begun outreach to businesses for a business portal where people could go and they'd have restricted access into their particular portal, that there would be information that they would have access to and be able to share. You know, the Virginia's Fusion Center works off of this Homeland Security Information Network now. And in one of their exercises, you can click on a particular firehouse and you know how many fire trucks are in that house at that particular time. And so to give you that common operational picture and an understanding of what's available to you. You could also click on a National Guard site and know how many trams or dump trucks or 7-ton personnel transporters are available to you in an emergency situation. So we're not there yet. We're going to get there. But through our education and outreach, we reach out to a lot of first responders, particularly in our education piece.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Brown, the superintendent of your state police. My portion will probably be fairly brief in comparison. I think Mr. Taylor felt that because of the timing that you mentioned, Madam Chair, with the Portland incident and so on, you may have questions specific to that. or specific to the JTTF or other matters. Just as a preface, I would like to share with you that in Oregon, and we take the concept of homeland security and counterterrorism very, very seriously in the state, because we have a historic and significant relationship with both the domestic terrorism through the organizations like the Earth Liberation Front, the Animal Liberation Front, and so on. And then, sadly, we also have a historic relationship with international terrorism, and that has surfaced probably most visibly through incidents like the Bly Training Facility, the Portland 7, and, of course, the recent Portland incident. Just so you know, and Sean commented about this, but I would also reiterate that the dialogue between agencies, the FBI, ATF, Secret Service, Marshals, DHS, that includes TSA and Coast Guard and ICE and Border Patrol, local and tribal agencies in Oregon, the communication is extraordinary. In fact, what you'll hear oftentimes from federal agency administrators, I just had this conversation again with the SAC of the FBI in Portland. They come from somewhere else generally, and all over the country, and when they get here, they are absolutely stunned by the level of cooperation and exchange that occurs between agencies at every level of government in Oregon. That's just the way it works here, and that's to the benefit of everyone. But I just wanted to see if you specifically had any questions or concerns about the Portland incident, if there was anything we could answer for you. Otherwise, we'll keep it on a strategic level, and I will pass it off to OEM. But
sorry, shall we continue with the presentation and then get to overall questions, or are there specific questions of OSP at this moment in time? Why don't you go ahead?
Well, good morning, Chair Callen, members of the committee. I'm Dave Stecky. I'm the Deputy Director for Oregon Emergency Management, and I have some written testimony that should be provided to you. But let me paraphrase. We know that you know that the Oregon Emergency Management's role in executing governor responsibilities in Section 401. OEM members have been here in front of the committee and discussed this on numerous occasions. So this is not new hat. This is old hat in regards to what we do at OEM. And so let me just highlight a couple of things, and then we can move on to questions. But we in OEM have to maintain this emergency services system. And so this system is defined by lots of parts, managing the ECC, ensuring that that's always up, Oregon Emergency Response System, the ORS, the partnership that OSP and OEM have to ensure that that's there. So at 12:05 yesterday, I'm getting that page that we have a tornado touching down, so we can execute properly. And then the emergency operations planning that occurs, and we have some other backup documentation in here that talks about EOPs. For us, it's a touchdown when the city manager for Almsville gets on KETU this morning and says, well, through Homeland Security grant dollars, I was able to get my EOP up through Marion County. Well, he doesn't know that it came through OEM, and that the process in which we're establishing these EOPs is kind of a state-type lead-ahead project, but he had a plan, and so he was able to execute that plan, and that's also very, very important to us to ensure that that gets done properly. So, you know, in summary, OEM is not a law enforcement agency. We're not on the JTTF. But whether it's to the left of boom in the planning process, in left of the tornado, in preparing for training, exercising, whatever the case may be, or to the right of boom or right of tornado where it talks about response, OEM just wants to be there to be the central figure to coordinate and schedule and execute governor responsibilities to ensure that we can save lives and be there at the right time at the right place. And so that's kind of the gist of where we're going, and we can move on to questions if you so desire.
Great, thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair Freeman. I just would like to make just a quick comment to the superintendent, to all of you, and that is that I appreciate the efforts that are being made throughout the state to be prepared, and what we're doing as law enforcement, but as agencies working together. You know, the situation in Portland could have been devastating, not only to the area and all those participants, but to this entire region, to know that we could have been hit that way. So the FBI, whether they weren't willing to share, I assume they had good cause and good reason for that. But I want to say to the superintendent specifically, to your folks having to relive the Woodburn tragedy, and to the officers involved and all your families, just thanks for the job you do, and the ability to do that job day in and day out as professionals. And I know it's not easy to go through that again, but I just want to say thank you. Keep up the great work, and I'm behind you 100%.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
Additional questions for this panel?
Thank you.
Wow, you guys answered everything in your presentation. Any good. Additional thing from you guys? Great, thank you. Well, members, it appears we have reached the end of the agenda. Anything else from the committee?
Well, we have an opportunity to do some really neat stuff right now.
Yeah, I know. I mean, let's think about that.
Uh-oh.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Well, I'm kind of concerned. It's not decided yet, but I'm kind of concerned because I haven't seen anything in the new permutations of committees that includes this committee as a continuation, or I know it's been suggested that Veterans goes with Human Services, but I haven't seen Emergency Services or Emergency Preparedness on any list. And so I'm just wondering if anybody, I'm always the last person to know anything, so if anybody knows anything I don't know to make me feel better, that would be great. But
I guess I can respond to that in a small way. I am part of that negotiating team, and I will tell you that the co-speakers designee are having discussions about where and how to fill the roles of the existing committees within the constraints of maybe a few less committees. Mm-hmm. So as Representative Cowan stated earlier, now that we've adopted these LCs into this committee, there's, you know, not only an ongoing need, but a demonstrated need for those type of things. And then along with your comments around emergency services, I will assure you that I have a continued concern to make sure that is at some point addressed in some committee as an ongoing amount of work that we've done and a continuation of the work we've done to this point.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
On that same line.
Matthews?
Thank you. And on that same line, the question was raised about committees and what this committee will become and where we'll be. And the LCs, I think, show that we're still spearheading issues for veterans. I had attended that mobilization ceremony last month or the beginning of this month. And I had made comment that Oregon's awfully good at getting troops ready to deploy and then welcoming back when they get here. And I'm proud of the work that we did, and we did that through the Veterans Task Force and a lot of the great work that was done in the interim. And we have done a lot of good work by committee through this interim process again. And I share my concerns, or your concerns as well, but I also feel like we have done a lot of great work, and there's a lot of great stewards of the veterans, and we're still deploying veterans, and they still need our services. So we're going to continue to help. So thank you for everything everybody's done. I've really enjoyed serving with this committee. Great job.
Thank you. On the subject of this last presentation that we had, I think I'd like to remind this committee that this is Veterans and Emergency Services. I'm a little disappointed that there was so little interest in something that was quite a major event, and I apologize to our presenters for that, but I didn't think it was something that we probably should have spent a little more time on. But if the committee doesn't have an interest, that's the way it is, I guess.
So. I asked a couple times for questions.
Madam Chair, may I respond to that?
Yes, you may.
I just want to speak my part here. It's not that I don't have an interest in this information. Some of it, I think, is privy to confidential. I mean, I have a great deal of questions about the incident in Portland. I have many questions about terrorism activity and what's going on. But many of those questions, I believe, are going to occur behind a closed door, not necessarily in public discussion. I do applaud them coming forward and being available to us, but the fact that I didn't ask a series of questions doesn't state that I have no interest in what they're presenting.
Certainly not, and I would agree that much of the information does, in fact, need, by virtue of public safety, to be confidential. I think that we it's important that we recognize and make sure that our communities understand that there is a lot of this work going on, and that we can never be prepared for every event that happens because you can't foresee those events. But the fact that we have a number of people who are dedicating a great deal of time to that readiness, I think, is important to highlight, and that was my purpose today. Representative Boone?
And I have to echo Representative Matthews' comments, because I felt the same way. As I had a bunch of questions I'd want to ask them, but there's cameras all around, and it just, if we could just go downstairs and have coffee and talk to them, that'd be great. Sure. I didn't want to put them on the spot, put it that way.
I think the important point is that we have a number of very good people working very hard on some very important issues and doing their best to protect the public, which is the important thing. So, with that, if there is no other business before the county, the committee, we stand. Representative Escobar.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I do want to say that a couple of our members will be leaving the chamber, and it's been a pleasure and an honor serving with you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, and ditto back.
We do very much thank you for the time and energy that you've put into this committee.
Yeah, he was my friend.
I couldn't tell whether that chair was empty or if I was just being blocked.
Representative Riley left a little bit ago.
That's why I was looking here.
Thank you.
All right. There being no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.
Thank you.